So the lesson tonight is going to take us back to our reading this week in Genesis, going back to Genesis chapter 14 is where we're going to begin. And there's 3 points that I want to make from 3 chapters. That was a part of our reading. And I'm going to tell you right now that each one of these points could be a sermon or a lesson within itself, but we're not going there. Sometimes perhaps we will. But that's not the point of this lesson tonight. I want to make just some very simple points from 3 different passages that was a part of our reading, and I just want us to try to grasp a bigger picture that comes from these. And so in chapter 14, Abram meets Melchizedek. Well, there can be a lot of questions about Melchizedek, some that I can't answer, and you can't answer them either. There's some things about Melchizedek that we don't know. He's a historical figure, I would say. And I mean historical in that he's a part of the historical record that God has given us. He's not a supernatural figure, and maybe shouldn't be as mysterious as we make him out to be sometimes. The historical record tells us no more about him than what's recorded here. I know there's a couple of passages in Hebrews, but I'm talking about the historical record of this Old Testament storyline. This is all we read about Melchizedek. Hebrews uses the example of Melchizedek to teach us some very meaningful, important lessons about Christ in Hebrews 5 and Hebrews chapter 7. We're not really going to spend time with that, but just thinking some things through here. What we read in this text, we're in Genesis chapter 14, verse 18. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of the heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who delivers your enemies into your hand." Then Abram gave him a tenth of everything. Now, this event happens after the skirmish or the war, so to speak, that Abram had trying to get Lot released from the kings that were warring. And Abram went after his nephew Lot and went to battle to spare him, to save him. Well, God's hand was certainly in that too. The text just said that. I mean, that Abraham was able to do that was because of the power of God. That's what happened there. And so then showing up on the scene is Melchizedek. We've not heard about him before. And in the historical record, we won't hear about him again. But the description of him is interesting, to say the least. He is described this way. Melchizedek is king and priest. He is king of Salem and priest of God Most High. Now, Salem, the word Salem itself means peace. And so by being king of Salem, he was the king of peace. Interesting designation to think about. And it seems like Melchizedek just kind of shows up here in the Bible story. No introduction. We didn't know he was coming. Nothing said. And then there's no farewell. He just exits the Bible story. Where did he go? We don't see that. And so where did he come from and where did he go? Who was this masked man, they used to say, back in the days when Earl remembers the old TV shows? You know? And now that's kind of like Melchizedek, kind of coming in, you know, sort of to the rescue, and then he's gone. And so that's to say, like, his home or his whereabouts are not familiar to us. We would not be able to describe or define his home of Salem. He was king of Salem. Well, he was a priest like no other. He was priest not by lineage, but by appointment to the position. He was greater than Abram, and Abram was one who was chosen by God, and yet Melchizedek is greater. Abram acknowledged the priesthood of Melchizedek by giving him a tithe of all. Now, Hebrews tells us that Levi paid tithes to him as well. But remember, Levi as priest was a receiver of tithes. And yet here in this historical account, he's a giver of tithes. Except where's Levi yet? Well, he's still in the loins of Abraham at this point, the Hebrew record would tell us about. Four generations from Abram. And yet he paid tithes through Abram, so to speak, indicating that Melchizedek was greater than he. And Levi was appointed by God. And so he was a priest like no other. Melchizedek blessed Abram. Melchizedek was greater than Abram. And Abram is one chosen by God. And yet Melchizedek was the one giving the blessing to Abraham, because it's the greater that always gives the blessing. And so we're seeing something here about the position of Melchizedek. Melchizedek becomes to us a figure of Christ, or he is a type of Christ. Well, we don't see that and understand that really until the record in Hebrews that helps us to see and to understand and open that up. And we're not really going there, remember? We're not doing an in-depth study. Big picture here. We're just trying to get the big picture of Melchizedek coming on the scene and leaving, and what he is to the storyline, what he is to Abram. This is Abram's story. Well, it's God's story, but Abram is a part of God's story at this point. And we've seen Melchizedek come into this. Now, just thinking ahead a little bit, what the Hebrew record would tell us, we're not turning there, just think for a moment. Melchizedek becomes this type of Christ. Jesus is king and priest. Melchizedek's the only other one to carry that designation. Jesus is the Prince of Peace, we are told. Jesus came from a world unknown. I know, he came from heaven. But a world unknown to us, other than a biblical description, we've not been there. Paint a picture for heaven for me. We would struggle to do that. Where did Melchizedek come from? We don't know. There's these similarities this way. Jesus was foretold, and we know where he is now, where he has gone back to. And yet we can't really describe heaven other than the figurative views that we have in Scripture. Jesus is a priest like no other priest, not by lineage, but by appointment to the position. Jesus is greater than all who came before him and all who come after him. And he is due all reverence, all glory, and all honor, great and small, will bow to Jesus. That's part of Abraham's storyline here. Just think big picture for a minute. We're going to move on. God's covenant with Abram, chapter 15. Again, here, we could just kind of strap down right here and make a lot of points about the events that unfold right here. We're not doing that. Just trying to get a big picture. Genesis chapter 15, this vision from Jehovah God to Abram. Verse 1. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless, and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, You have given me no children, so a servant of my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, Look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. Then he said to him, so shall be your offspring. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. So this is the vision, and it continues. It's not through, but we're stopping there. And so the story continues, but here's this vision from God to Abram. There's a promise from God. I am your shield. I am your reward, God is saying to Abram. There's Abram's concern, but I have no son. I mean, who's going to be my heir? God's promise, you will have a son from your loins, and your children will be as great as the number of stars in the sky. Try to count those if you can. And so it's a great blessing that is coming, a blessing greater than you could even begin to imagine. And Abram believed. If nothing more was said about Abram, wow, that says a lot. Just with that, God believes. Or Abram believes what God says and what he promises. And so God promised to Abram something that was inconceivable. Hold your finger here for a minute. One side trip. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 and verse 8 beginning. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out of the place which he would afterward receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on earth. Thinking back to our historical record, God promised to Abraham something that seemed inconceivable, and Abraham believed that. He believed what God said. And there is more then to this covenant, because there is a covenant that God makes with Abram and Abram with God. In the latter part of chapter 15 of our text in Genesis, there was more in that vision that came out. More promises are made by God. And the covenant is ratified by sacrifices and offerings that Abram brings to God. It was an agreement. I mean, when Abram listened to what God said and he believed, and he brought the sacrifices, he was saying, I believe you. And that was the ratification of that when he brought those sacrifices. It's an incredible view of the faith of Abraham, and that God is leading Abram by the hand and promising that everything's going to be all right. Abram, just follow me. Just follow me, is what God was saying. Think about just these two stories and some of these incredible events that were taking place in Abram's life. And at times, wouldn't you think you'd have to step back and think, did that really just happen? Is this for real? You know, and it had to just seemed inconceivable. And yet he believed. Because he had faith in God. Chapter 18. In chapter 18, Abram has three visitors. The Lord visits Abram. Chapter 18, beginning at verse 1. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby, and when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me get you something to eat, and you can be refreshed, and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. "Quick," he said, "get three seahs of fine flour and knead it, and bake some bread." Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. Then he brought some curds and milk and the calf that had been prepared and set it before them. And while they ate, he stood near them under a tree. "Where is your wife, Sarah?" they asked. "There, in the tent," he said. Then the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Now Sarah was listening at the entrance to the tent, which was behind him. Abraham and Sarah were already old and well advanced in years, and Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So she laughed to herself, and as she thought, "After I am worn out and my master is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I am old?' Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son." I wonder what Abram is thinking. Is it again kind of, wow, is this for real? Is this the Lord? Did he perceive that in at the beginning that he was in the presence of angels, some might say? Or was he in the presence of God? Was he showing respect to a stranger, or did he suppose that these were in fact supernatural beings? No one has seen God. The Gospel of John chapter 1 tells us no one has seen God. Was God appearing in the form of an angel? Was he appearing in the form of men? I'm not exactly sure. I could answer it both ways, I think. And in fact, I might even be right if I answered it both ways. But I'm not sure. Abraham was gracious, though maybe only thinking that these were ordinary men he didn't really know. There's a passage in Hebrews chapter 13 that just gives this insight. It says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by this some unwittingly have entertained angels." Hebrews 13 and verse 2. A hospitable attitude is always a good choice. And because Abraham was hospitable, he succeeded in entertaining the Lord and two angels. Let that sink in for just a moment. You think about who it was that Abraham was entertaining. You know, the word Lord, as it's used in verse 13, is the word translated Jehovah. Earlier in the text, when Abraham says, "my Lord," he was speaking as like, "my master" is the word that's used there. But it seems later he has at least some inclination here. After the Lord has said to him, "you're going to have a son," he perhaps now sees and recognizes that this is God, or a representative of God, because only God could predict a child that would be born to Sarah. And through Abraham would come a seed or a lineage that would have eternal consequences for all mankind. Three different events we've looked at. And like we said, each one of them could be expounded on. More could be said. Three times in a short order here, that we find Abraham was in the midst of great figures that were at the least representatives of God, or perhaps even was God. Did Abraham know and understand all of the ramifications of the situations that was presented to him? I don't think so. I don't think he could really truly understand all that could come from what was happening and what was being said. I don't know that he could see the outcome of all that was unfolding in his life and what was going to come from his life in generations to come. You know, we gain a little insight from these stories about the big picture of God's plan. That's the point of this lesson. I know there's more that could be said about each of these stories. Don't go there. Sometimes we get so bogged down in detail that we miss the picture. I might even have a reputation of being rather detailed in class sometimes. Detail sometimes is interesting to me, and I'm hoping is interesting to you, or I'm boring you to death. But sometimes we can become so bogged down in detail that we miss the story. In these three stories here, when you step back and you look at the big picture, we see that there is a plan. It's not Abraham's plan. He's just a part of it. He's a player in it. He's a key player in it. It is God's plan. It's God's plan being unfolded in such a way that, again, I don't think Abraham can see the big picture, and the only reason we can is because we have the revelation. We have the book. We can connect the dots of these stories to things that were yet to happen and yet to take place. But if we come away tonight understanding anything, I want it to be this: that there was a big plan unfolding, that it was God's plan, that God was in control of a greater destiny for all of mankind. And that is what was slowly being introduced. And as we continue reading through the Bible story, we see more stories that add to that plan. And it comes to fruition when Jesus comes. Then we can see the bigger picture of God's plan. And we are a part of that plan. It includes us. I know we're not in that story. But we're in this part of the story. We're in the part of the story where we are the ones that can be submissive to God through His Son, Jesus Christ. We enter the story. We enter the plan of God. That plan of God that has eternal consequences. We are a part of that. And that's the bigger side of that story that God has revealed to us. And so as we're doing our readings day by day, and sometimes there's some aspects of some stories that we step back and we think, where is this going? Or I don't quite understand. Keep reading the story, as there is more and more revealed to us. We're a part of that plan with eternal consequences and an eternal destiny in heaven if we are obedient to God's plan, submissive to Him, following His will, His rule, His doctrine. We can have an eternal home. We said this morning, Jesus is still calling, and He is. Are you ready to be a part of that plan? If you need to come tonight to make yourself right before the Lord, don't delay. Please come.